Did you realize that we are actually living in the least violent, most peaceful time in human history? Yes, even after 9/11, the rise of ISIS in the Middle East, police shootings and protests, children's faces on milk cartons. Even when you count two world wars, nuclear weapons, and genocides in the 20th century, the entire world is a safer and more peaceful place. Funny how it doesn't feel that way, does it? Yet this is the conclusion of Harvard psychology professor Steven Pinker in his book, The Better Angels of Our Nature, Why Violence Has Declined. As counterintuitive as it feels, Pinker makes a compelling case. It's not that we have necessarily suddenly become wildly peaceful. Rather, the world has been far more grisly for thousands and thousands of years, and violence was far more accepted and less likely and likely far less horrifying to peoples long ago. It was simply a part of daily life. We tend to think back on times past as simpler, more peaceful and bucolic. In an internet survey, Pinker found that people guessed that 20th century England was about 14% more violent than in the Middle Ages. In fact, it was 95% less violent. For most of history, as philosopher Thomas Hobbes put it, human life was solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short. Cheery guy, Hobbes. Yet while that may once have been true, over centuries, it is less and less true for more and more people. With the creation of nations and states, the percentage of deaths in warfare plummeted, says Pinker. During the Pax Romana under the Roman Empire, plenty of people were still killed, subjugated, and enslaved, and it was still a whacking improvement over more lawless and violent times. Life in the Middle Ages was still pretty gruesome. Torture was common and public. We are horrified at torture in a way that medieval times simply were not. As one political scientist put it, ancient peoples put a low value on other people's suffering because pain and death were so common. For most of human history, slavery has been the rule rather than the exception. In the 15th and 16th centuries, somewhere between 60,000 and 100,000 witches, 85% of them women, were put to death. There have been cultures who practiced human sacrifice, and throughout much of history, heretics and blasphemers were killed, burned at the stake. Then, in what Pinker calls the civilizing process, there was a dramatic drop in the murder rate in Europe, starting in about the 14th century. Part of it was simply the development of good manners. As Pinker says, the people of the Middle Ages were, in a word, gross. And they started to become less disgusting. The etiquette books of the day are fascinating. Apparently, people had to be told, don't greet someone while they are urinating or defecating. Don't spit so far that you have to look for the saliva to put your foot on it. Don't lick your greasy fingers, wipe them on the bread or on your coat. Okay, so those are just a little bit gross, but I know that some people get a little bored by history, and I needed to pull you in. Here are a few rules about knives. Don't pick your teeth with your knife. Don't use the tip of your knife to put your food in your mouth. Don't use your knife to point at someone. Don't cut bread, break it. Most people in the Middle Ages carried knives, and if a quarrel broke out at dinner, well, mayhem might ensue, which is why we still have rules that seem arbitrary today, like breaking bread with your hands rather than cutting it, which my mother told me and I never understood and she could never explain. Yet, think about it. A sharp knife in the hands of a diner in more violent times could be a worrisome thing. Far from its stuffy, old-fashioned reputation, etiquette may actually have played a role in reducing the murder rate. And as people became less disgusting, we came to value each other differently. It's easier to love you if you aren't as smelly. Moving ahead, the 17th and 18th centuries brought us the age of reason, the Enlightenment, and the concept of human rights. Pinker says people began to sympathize more with their fellow humans and were no longer indifferent to their suffering. The circle of people we cared about and valued widened beyond just our own kin, our own babies, and our immediate friends. Think of the Declaration of Independence and the French Declaration of the Rights of Man. Fast forward to the mid-20th century, to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and the United Nations Charter. The 20th century saw a steady expansion of rights: women's rights, gay rights, the rights of children, our abhorrence of cruelty to animals. But you might still say, what of the horrors of the 20th century? How can it have been more peaceful? Yet when you look at the percentage of a population killed in wars and genocides throughout history, World War II barely makes the top 10. Though 55 million people died, it was nowhere near as devastating as the An Lushan revolt in 8th century China, which killed only 36 million people. But that was fully two-thirds of the population of China at the time, and one-sixth of the population on the entire planet. A modern-day equivalent of 278 million people. Simply put, the chances that you will die by violence are minuscule compared to what they have been throughout human history. Yes, there are places and populations that know significantly more violence than others. And still, the world is less violent. As one becomes aware of the decline of violence, the world begins to look different, Pinker says. The past seems less innocent, the present less sinister. You start to appreciate the small gifts of coexistence that would have seemed utopian to our ancestors. The interracial family playing in the park. The comedian who lands a zinger on the commander-in-chief. The countries that quietly back away from a crisis instead of escalating to war. This certainly looks like progress to me. Yet my purpose today is not necessarily to convince you that we live in more peaceful times, because I know it doesn't feel that way. Yet all of this begs the question, why are we so afraid? What is it we are so afraid of? Part of our fear arises because in the more immediate term, there was an increase in violence and crime. In the 1960s and 70s in North America and Europe, there was a decided uptick in violence. It has since dropped again precipitously, and our children are far safer now than when I was a child. And yet, it still doesn't feel that way. Part of our fear arises because a worldwide media brings depictions of violence throughout the world into our homes. If it bleeds, it leads. And part of all of this is because we, as a culture, have changed. Human life, individual human life, is more precious to us. Think about the reaction to the Pakistani girl Malala Yousafzai, who was shot by the Taliban for speaking up for the education rights of girls. There was almost universal and worldwide condemnation of this act. It feels so horrifying. Yet in another time, if a girl were abducted, raped, or killed, it wouldn't have been much noted beyond her family. Today, such a brave girl can win the Nobel Peace Prize. Think, too, of the response to events in Missouri, New York, Ohio, Wisconsin. How much racial violence barely made a ripple in our consciousness just 60 years ago. Indeed, we are so horrified by violence, that we are so horrified by violence is part of the reason the world is less violent. Because it horrifies us so much, we allow less to happen. So just for the heck of it, let yourself imagine that you really do live in a safer world than any other people in any other time. If that were true, what would it mean about how you live your life? What if you lived your life as if the world is a safe place, safer than it's ever been? I have a friend in Oregon who heard about the police capturing a burglar in her neighborhood. The man had been running through people's backyards to make his escape. My friend's response was to get central air conditioning. That way, she could keep all her windows and doors closed and locked, even on the very hottest of days. Somewhere in there, she seemed to miss the point that the cops had actually protected her by catching the burglar. her fearful response caused her to close herself off even more, hunker down into her house. This is what fear can do to us. And this is why we should resist it. Fear cuts us off from one another. It shuts us down. It makes us want to protect ourselves, our children, our homes. We are caught in something of a bind. Because we value human life so highly, we are more afraid. This shows up in clearest relief in how we raise our children. Once common, infanticide and child abuse are unspeakable crimes to us now. Yet our fear leads us to overprotect our children. Because we hear so much about child abductions, we restrict our child's lives, overscheduling and constantly supervising. Back in the 60s and 70s, those days which were notably more violent than today, my mother sent me out the door on summer afternoons, summer mornings, and didn't need to know where I was till dinner time. I roamed fields and streets freely, and yet it was so much more dangerous for me then. And today, the vast majority of children on milk cartons are runaway teens or have been abducted by a parent in a custody dispute, not kidnapped by a stranger. In the 90s, there were 200 to 300 abductions each year, and that figure has fallen to something around 100. And when the odds are actually calculated, statistics show that if you wanted your child to be kidnapped and held overnight by a stranger, you'd have to leave the child outside and unattended for 750,000 years. And yet, we are afraid. What do you fear? How does it restrict and constrict your life? When we are afraid, we pull away from one another. We withdraw. Our lives become less expansive. We lose our sense of community and connection, the very things that make us safer. So what if you lived as if you truly believed that the world was mostly safe and mostly trustworthy? What would change in your life if you lived that way? Being human, being alive in these squishy, vulnerable bodies is a fearful and fearsome thing. Looking beyond those fears to love others who are just as squishy and vulnerable only compounds our fear. Yet it is also the most incredibly awesome and awe-inspiring thing to do. Don't miss out on the love and the joy possible because a greater fear gets in the way. There is plenty to fear simply being alive. It's just that in reality, there is far less to fear than we think. We enjoy the peace we find today, Pinker tells us, because people in past generations were appalled by the violence in their time and worked to reduce it. And so we should work to reduce the violence that remains in our time. We should be appalled by mass shootings in malls, schools, movie theaters, beheadings of captives. We should be appalled by violence that is caused by hunger and poverty. We should work for peace. And the first step is actually being less fearful. Have a clearer idea of what there is to fear and not letting fear run our lives. Yes, there are still inner and outer demons in the world. But we also have what Abraham Lincoln called the better angels of our nature. We can choose which wolf to feed. So feed the better angels of your nature. Trust that humanity, for all our failings and our propensity for violence, has spent the last several thousand years growing more peaceful and caring for one another more carefully. Live in the world as if it is a safer place. Pay attention to what you fear, but don't let it run your life. Know that living by faith and not by fear, we can indeed transform the world. We can help it be an even more peaceful place by starting and understanding how much peace there already is. May we be the peacemakers. Amen, and blessed be.